Next on our show, Luisa Herrera talks with socialist activist Tom Wojak about a recently released statement by the Democratic Socialists of America denouncing the U.S.-Cuba embargo. They argue that it's past time to end the inhumane economic sanctions and normalize relations so that U.S. citizens can judge for themselves the successes or the unmet challenges of organizing a society in a very different way. By way of introduction to this segment, we're going to play a clip from the original song about Che Guevara called Hasta Siempre, or Until Forever, by Cuban revolutionary singer and songwriter Carlos Puebla.
Aprendimos a quererte desde la histórica altura donde el sol de tu bravura le puso cerco a la muerte.
Aquí se queda la clara y la entrañable transparencia de tu querida presencia.
My name is Luisa, and I am talking today with socialist activist Tom Wojak about a recently released statement he authored by the Democratic Socialists of America. Some of the demands listed in the statement are: the United States government must nullify all economic sanctions against the Republic of Cuba. The U.S. government and its allies must immediately cease all operations of espionage, coercion, and propaganda meant to destabilize the Republic of Cuba. The U.S. must permanently suspend all operations in Guantanamo Bay, Gitmo Bay, withdraw all personnel, and cede all territory back to the Republic of Cuba. The government must permit the free travel between the Republic of Cuba and the United States. The U.S. government should request medical assistance from Cuban medical brigades, encourage medical collaboration with Cuban doctors and researchers, and permit the import of Cuban pharmaceuticals. Tom Wojak of Chicagoland is a member of the DSA, a member of the DSA International Committee, and co-chair of the Americas Working Group under the IC. He is the author of the Cuba Solidarity Resolution, which passed at the 2019 National Convention, and the national liaison between DSA and the National Network on Cuba. Hi, Tom.
Hi, very happy to be here today.
So just starting off, what is the National Network on Cuba?
The National Network on Cuba is an umbrella organization of American organizations that are seeking to end the embargo against Cuba and also to promote friendship between the peoples of the United States and the peoples of Cuba.
And what sparked your interest in Cuba solidarity organizing?
Well, initially, I had attended one of the international May Day brigades. I had never, ever been to a place that was outside the sphere of American influence. And as a very young socialist at the time, it was extremely rewarding to just see that a different world could be organized. I think under capitalism, you're taught and it's trained into your head that there's only one type of world that can possibly be organized. While I was there, I was able to talk with so many people from Cuba. I was able to listen to some of the great successes they've had and also some of the great calamities that the embargo has caused the Cuban people. And it gave me a much more complete portrait of life on the island, which I have carried with me through all my Cuba solidarity organizing.
Could you give a brief history and explanation of the embargo, sometimes referred to as the Helms-Burton Act, and maybe the UN response to it?
Cuba has been the victim of the longest running embargo in world history, which is imposed on it by the U.S. government and its allies. It is meant to be a huge impediment for conducting trade and conducting commerce, and is basically meant as a huge amount of pressure on Cuban life. And it is one of the, if not the, central concern of the Cuban people. And it's been a huge calamity. in many ways, in some small, some very, very large. The American embargo sanctions affect the importing of small consumer goods or the staying at Cuban hotels. But in a much larger way, it prohibits Cubans from visiting their family members. It greatly limits what Cubans are allowed to bring into the country, including necessary supplies that would be incredibly helpful to their infrastructure. And that is basically the design of the embargo. Helms-Burton is one of the big ones, but that's not the only one. I would invite people to look into some of the other sanctions. But basically, the purpose is the same: to stop Cuban socialism on the island by targeting the Cuban people. It's inhumane. And the UN has actually voted for, 28 consecutive years overwhelmingly to condemn the American embargo on Cuba, but obviously due to the privileged position of the United States within the UN, not a lot has resulted from that. But most governments reject the American embargo as a fundamental violation of human rights and human dignity. And this sort of work that I hope that the DSA will be doing, and I hope that other organizations in America on the left and otherwise will take more seriously.
Then what would lifting the embargo mean for Cuba and the Cuban people?
It's funny. We're not even talking about planting a Cuban flag in Washington, D.C. I think the point of the Cuban Solidarity Movement isn't to give Cuba some sort of special status in the world community. We're simply insisting that Cuba be treated like a normal country. And we're fighting for the normalization of Cuba in the eyes of America in order to for Cuba to realize its, autonomy, which so far has been greatly hindered by United States embargoes. So, for instance, one of the things that Cubans have been calling for is the ability to trade with the United States, which is the makes a lot of sense. It's one of the closest countries to them, 80 miles off the shore. It has products that the United States would benefit from. I think culturally, even there would be a much more vibrant exchange of information and ideas, which is one of the other things that the embargo is designed to do, to limit contact between the Cuban people and the American people, to make sure that we don't get to see Cuba. We don't get to talk to the Cuban people or listen to what they want. I think that the American government very fundamentally wants Cubans to be aliens in a lot of way, because it's a lot easier to persecute the Cuban people if sanctions were lifted and our relationship became more normalized. I think that Americans would be able to see Cuba for what it is, which is a wonderful, vibrant place full of wonderful, vibrant people.
So aside from kind of the rich cultural contributions that Cuba has to offer, one of the programs that they've had for quite some time are the Cuban medical brigades. Could you talk a little bit about the brigades?
Yes. Cuba has been internationally lauded for sending its medical personnel abroad. It's done this since the days of the, the early days of the revolution. The Cuban doctors were sent to Angola. Cuban doctors were sent to South Africa. Cuban doctors, until very recently, were doing work in Brazil. And basically, this medical humanitarianism has been one of the cornerstones of Cuban foreign policy. Even in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, Cuba had offered to send medical personnel and assistance to the United States to help, with all the emergencies that were happening in New Orleans. But this overture was rejected by the administration at the time. Cuban medical brigades should be absolutely commended for their work. They go into places where no one else goes. They have been recognized even recently with the COVID epidemic for going into countries like Italy and providing assistance. Similarly, the American people would greatly benefit from such programs and cooperation. Another dimension of it is that the Cuban biotechnological industry has been producing many medicines and treatments that in most cases, Americans are not allowed to access. And I believe that the future is medical cooperation with Cuba, again, as if it were a normal country.
So shifting gears just a little bit, I know you visited Cuba as part of your solidarity work. And so could you talk about your personal experience kind of interacting with the Cuban Socialist Project?
I think as a young socialist, when I first went to Cuba, I had a lot of these preconceived notions of Cuba that are very, very popular with the United States State Department, that it's somehow this lifeless communist hell, that it's that people are always just frowning and people are always just, a Cold War caricature. And very immediately, anyone who's ever been to Cuba will know that that is just the absolute antithesis of what it actually is, that there's so much life and so much vibrance to the Cuban people who are operating, I think, quite admirably, even in spite of these enormous sanctions. I met with many Cubans, many of whom were extraordinarily enthusiastic of the socialist project that was on the island. But I think also more telling, I met Cubans who were not enthusiastic and were able to make that opinion known. It's not just this overreaching police state. It's not this cultural or ideological monolith. It's not like, again, the Cold War caricature. People are just being held, politically hostage by their government. It's not just this monolithic people. And I think people would be very surprised, because that flies directly into the myth that I think the United States government has been perpetrating about socialism and other socialist projects. One of the most valuable things that Cuba provides in terms of fostering a greater political imagination for people is understanding what it is to actually have living, breathing socialism. Because formerly, before I went to Cuba, I was just, I just ran a Marxist reading group. I didn't know socialists that occupied great seats of power. And when I went to Cuba, I started to meet socialists who ran factories, or socialists who, were appointed to run libraries, or doctors who were socialists. And I think that greatly expanded my imagination for what was possible. Basically, again, all that the Cuba Solidarity Movement is asking is that people be able to go and see for themselves what Cuba actually is. That the Cuban people and the American people have so much in common, have so much to share with each other. And the Cuba Solidarity Organizing Movement is only seeking to build that.
The notion that relations with Cuba be normalized is such a controversy in places like where I'm from. I grew up in South Florida, and similar political circles. And so if we had to blame, who could we kind of identify as being part of the cause for the continued embargo? Is it the Cuban expat community that has such a strong voice in Florida?
Well, first of all, I am always very, very reluctant to just write off the Cuban expat community as if it were still, the 1960s. I think that the first wave of people that left Cuba were obviously the people who were ousted by the Cuban Revolution, the capitalists, the landowners, the very, very wealthy that opposed the redistribution policies of Fidel Castro. But as history progressed, I think that there have been a great multitude of people that come to the United States for various reasons. I think in a lot of way, life has been made very difficult by the U.S. sanctions. And, if people are moving from Cuba to the United States, who can blame them, right? All we want is a better life. And so I'm always very, very reluctant to just universally blame Cuban Americans. That said, I think that there is a hyper-reactionary portion of Cuban Americans that are being enabled fundamentally by the U.S. government. Very recently, we saw the absurdity of the U.S. government hosting a medal or some sort of ceremony celebrating the failed Bay of Pigs operation. So I think that as that generation is slowly phasing out, a new generation is taking its place. So for instance, young Cuban Americans are often just as susceptible to democratic socialism or socialism as are any other population of young people. And so I think that paper tiger of the Miami reactionary is being given a very outsized role in American politics, intentionally so. But also I think that it's slowly receding. I think there's a lot of good evidence to suggest that that sort of mentality is changing towards, at the very worst, apathy. You know, why are we against Cuba? Why are we imposing this seemingly absurd embargo on the Cuban people? And at best, a legitimate enthusiasm for improved relationships.
I might push back a little bit on that level of optimism, having been just virtue of my having lived in South Florida. I would say that socialist organizing in the Miami area, in and around Miami, and really Florida writ large, is very difficult because that perception kind of remains. And I do agree with you that it's a small population of expats that are driving the narrative, but they are a minority. They're a powerful minority, though, especially considering kind of the privileged nature of folks who moved to the United States. But, you know, I will say that there is more folks are on board with the idea of normalizing trade with Cuba. I was in Miami. I was working for a labor organization when Obama made the announcement that, you know, he planned to open up Cuba. And I worked with a lot of Cubans, Cuban Americans. You know, they either moved here when they were one or they were second gen, but they were generally on board, and they're perception was, hasn't been working, so let's try something new. And so just if you could briefly talk about kind of President Obama's intentions to open up Cuba and what that meant.
Yeah, what's interesting with Cuba solidarity organizing is I think that there are actually a lot of people across the political spectrum that want to end the embargo, not just on the left, but surprisingly, also Democrats and even some Republicans. Not only is the embargo a moral crisis, it simply doesn't make sense. And so there are a lot of people trying to open embargo for various reasons. And I think that that presents an urgency to the left in voicing a respect for ending the embargo from the left. I think that we need to prioritize Cuban socialism. I think we need to prioritize Cuban autonomy. Obama, for instance, I think one of the issues that he really wanted to do was, if he opened up Cuba to American companies, that he would be able to conquer Cuba with bankers, right? But the thing that he kind of encountered, at least as far as I understand it, was that the Cuban economy was not compatible with the sort of neoliberalism that he wanted to export, that in fact the Cuban people insisted on socialism, and that was something that they were not willing to negotiate in the way that, you know, East Germany, for instance, during the fall of the Berlin Wall was willing to negotiate. And I'm hoping that in the future, the lesson that the left learns is that we need to present a viable alternative. We need to propose very specific, careful language in ending the Cuban embargo on Cuba's terms, rather than just trying to make it some, you know, additional neocolonial project, which the Cuban people have emphatically stated they are not interested in doing.
So lastly, how can people learn more about Cuba and Cuban socialism?
There are so many, obviously, academic works and documentaries. But actually, very recently, there has been this fantastic documentary series that was just released called Belly of the Beast, which can be found at bellyofthebeastcuba.com, which really tells the Cuban story from a very, very humanizing perspective. I would also highly encourage people to keep their ear to the ground for the DSA International Committee. I would also like to plug the National Network on Cuba, which is a very, very reliable source on all matters Cuba. And all information can be found at their website, nnoc.info.
Thanks so much for your time, Tom.
Thank you so very, very much. Very happy to be here, Luisa. Thank you.
de donde el sol calienta la tierra. De allí donde el corazón late más sincero. Vengo de donde el sol pasa las horas enamorando a la rumba, cantándole aquel bolero.
That was from a song extolling the virtues of Cuba called Me Dicen Cuba, roughly translated, They Call Me Cuba. The song is by Cuban trumpet player Alexander Abreu and his group Habana de Primera.